Good morning, everyone, once again. I was just telling my friends here that now that I have committed to doing these Whispers from Eternity satsangs, I started going back through the databanks of my own mind and trying to remember some of the Whispers from Eternity that I've already gone deeply into, because those are obviously where I'll begin, because having plumbed their depths a little bit myself, hopefully some of their spiritual power will come out a little more clearly. And I was chuckling to myself yesterday when I realized that many of the Whispers from Eternity I chose are sort of the battle cry ones, demanding that the impurities of our life be purified, and that our minds, like unwrought steel, be formed into sharp swords of concentration, and so on and so forth. And I realized, oh, I was going through a pretty intense time of my life when I was doing this practice. But then I realized we're going through a pretty intense time of the world right now, so maybe that's just fine. But don't worry, there are some of the beautiful, tender, heart-opening, devotional ones in the mix too that will come out in the weeks to come. But today I thought we would take a look at number 161, demand to be able to conquer fear. And this is a very interesting prayer demand to me for many reasons, and has proved to be very inspiring. But one thing that I'd like to highlight first and foremost, because what I would like to do with these satsangs is not just give to you some of the inspiration that I have received, but also try to give you the keys that I have used to unlock some of these prayer demands. And one thing that we can never overlook is simply paying very close attention to the words that Master uses. When I was an actor, an exercise that we would often employ is just ask ourselves, why did the author choose to say that exactly in those words? He could have chosen 1,000 different words and ordered in 1,000 different ways. Why did he choose that particular expression? What does that expression say that all the others doesn't? And just by exploring in this way, we get closer and closer to the essential inspiration and consciousness behind any literary work. And so immediately, the title of this prayer really catches my attention, because it is demand to be able to conquer fear. It's not the demand to conquer fear, but we're asking for the ability to conquer fear. But then what's beautiful about this is it implies to me that even if we had the ability, the choice to choose to conquer fear is still our own. And this is really important, because I myself have faced a number of frightening circumstances in my life. And when you find yourself in those terrifying moments, be it where your physical life is on the line or when some principle is at stake, of course there's the desire to succumb to fear. But as a friend of mine put it beautifully, courage is not the absence of fear, but courage is the willingness to act regardless of fear. And so this prayer demand is beautiful. Yogananda said that fearlessness is a divine quality, and it truly is. And as we continue to progress closer and closer to fearlessness, it's important to remind ourselves that fear is a choice, and courage is also a choice. And we don't have to be perfect in our fearlessness. We can just demand to be able to conquer fear. So, now let's take a look at this prayer. I'll read it in its entirety first, and then we'll talk about some of the sections. So let's sit up straight, and let's interiorize our awareness into the heart. And again, let's play a game of imagination, and I want you to feel that these words are the words of your own soul, that these words are the words of your superconscious self calling out from the inner sanctum of your soul. Don't feel that these are foreign to you, but try to receive these as your very own. And then, as you do so, try to imagine, what would I be for these words to originate within me? Infinite Spirit, teach me to comprehend the utter uselessness of being afraid. Help me to keep in mind that even death, since come it must, at least comes only once, and need not be suffered 1,000 times beforehand through fear. When death does come, it will be by nature's mercy. When it comes, I will welcome it in my soul, for I will understand that it is time for me to move on, lowering the curtain on this life's drama, but traveling, perhaps, to something new and equally interesting. Let me not be a psychological antique fearing change. Teach me not to paralyze my nerves daily with the dread of some future imaginary accident. Such dread may only invite the accident to happen. Bless me that I not let fear anesthetize my mind and shut off my unlimited power as thy child to overcome all tests and trials. Help me to realize that whether I am awake or asleep, alert or dreaming, thine all-protecting presence encircles me always. Help me to see that neither mighty fortress nor the wealth of Croesus could protect me from disease, earthquakes, and all kinds of accidents. That thou alone art my protector, and that though I walk where bullets fly or where swarms of bacteria abound, I am ever safe and haloed in thy all-sheltering light. This prayer is so beautiful because he walks us through so many aspects of what it would mean to be able to conquer fear. And one of my favorite parts of this prayer is the end, where he then gives us a description of what it will feel like when we are truly able to conquer fear by the presence of God within us, that we are ever safe and haloed in thy all-sheltering light. Beautiful. So now let's take a look at some of these sections and go a little more deeply into them and into our understanding and to trying to integrate them into our hearts and into our minds. Infinite Spirit, teach me to comprehend the utter uselessness of being afraid. That right there has so much in it. We could meditate on that for a long, long time. And it's important to remember this, especially when we do start being afraid, is what use is it really doing for us? All it does is clog our nerves and paralyze us from having the ability to actually do what we need to do. Just last night, for Swami Kriyananda's Moksha celebration, I was running some of the technical elements of the program and found myself realizing that in 1 minute I was going to have to stand up and talk about what Swami Kriyananda gave to me, and I found myself feeling completely inadequate in the face of that for many reasons, but we don't have to get into that. And I felt that glimmer of fear arise in my heart. What's gonna happen? What if I don't speak well? What if it doesn't come out? What if the inspiration isn't there? What if I sound like a buffoon? All these things. And I realized, what's the point of even being afraid? If I get up and I sound like a buffoon, I do. Being afraid about it now is only going to magnetize that possibility into reality. So I might as well just surrender myself into God's hands. And that sounds like a platitude until it becomes a reality. And somehow yesterday, by the grace of God, because there was so much of God's presence in our temple, I could feel the presence of Master, the presence of Swami. And I just sort of handed them the reins and said, I'll do my best. This one's on you. And in that surrender, I could feel my heart relax and open. And suddenly I could surrender myself into a stream of inspiration and the flow of God's presence that was so beautiful. It touched me deeply, and hopefully it was translated through the camera to some other people as well. But so fear itself really is a ploy of Satan, it seems to me. Because when we're afraid, we are living in the future. And time itself is an illusion. When we're living in the future and we are concerned that the future of our lives is going to be worse than the present moment we are living in, that's what generates fear. But there is no future. There is no past. Yogananda teaches us that time is all an illusion, that we can only ever live in the now. And that even when that future comes, we won't be living in the future, we'll be living now. right here, right in ourselves. And the thing is, in the now, there is always the potential to shelter in God's presence. It's hard to shelter in God's presence in the future. It's hard to shelter in God's presence in the past, but it's always available to us now. And I had an experience that sort of illustrates and gives me some faith in this. When I had appendicitis, I didn't realize that it was appendicitis for many reasons that I won't go into, but I stayed up all night having absolutely agonizing abdominal pain for about 10 or 11 hours. And I started throwing up just violently, and I was losing so much water and fluid, I started feeling like I was gonna pass out, and I lost all the color in my face, and it was so painful my body would be racked by shaking, and I couldn't even control myself, and let alone stand or speak or walk. And finally, after 10 hours of this, from midnight until 10 a.m. in the morning, I finally surrendered and told my girlfriend at the time, Suryani, I said, you gotta take me to the hospital, because either I'm dying or something really bad is happening. And she took me to the hospital, and what was really interesting was I resisted the pain, and I resisted the experience that I was going through, because I was afraid of really accepting it and afraid of experiencing it to its full potential. And so I held the pain away from me with all my will. And at first I thought that was the right thing to do spiritually, by detaching my mind from the pain and refusing to acknowledge its presence. But eventually it just totally broke me. The pain was so intense. When we were walking from the car to the emergency room, it became so unbearable, I literally couldn't walk. And I collapsed onto the sidewalk, and I said, Suryani, you have to go get a wheelchair. I can't walk. And so she left me, and I sat there on the sidewalk, and I just had to surrender myself into the experience and into the pain and not be afraid of it, and rather embrace it and discover, even in the midst of this, can I still feel God's presence? Even in the midst of this, can I still offer my heart to my God, to Guru? And I found that I could. And more so, or more to the point, I found that when I finally relaxed and accepted where I was, accepted the pain, and even accepted that the fact that I could be dying, then all of a sudden, the pain didn't bother me so much. The pain was just as present, but my consciousness was left less affected by it. And the nurses came and got me, and they took care of me. And it was really actually quite a very beautiful experience for me. But as soon as I was able to overcome the fear of what's going to happen to me, what is happening to me, and just really surrender my life into God's hands and say, and without any reservation, God, if this is the time you want this little body to crumple away and die, so be it. But I'm going to give myself into your hands. Then I wasn't so afraid anymore. And when I wasn't afraid, my consciousness wasn't suffering, even though my body was. And so that taught me a lot about how to overcome fear and how to embrace uncomfortable situations in our life head on, rather than sort of kind of wishing they would just be over with already. Just embrace it. You know, Swami Kriyananda said very humorously, he said, if you ever find yourself in a conversation with a really dull or boring person, instead of wishing that the conversation would be over, he said, really invest yourself and ask, how boring could it really be? And so too, we can apply that example into anything in our life. Anything that we're afraid of, how bad could it really be? Let's find out. And or how painful could it really be? And in the midst of that pain, can I find God? Because God, of course, is just as much present in pain as he is in joy. He is just as much present in our suffering as he is in our worldly happiness. And so the yogi looks upon suffering and worldly pleasure as the same. So in fact, suffering and sorrow and trial and tribulation are a great spiritual opportunity for us to overcome our desires and aversions. So what's the purpose of being afraid of them? We ought to embrace them and even celebrate them when they come, because they're an opportunity for us to prove to ourselves that we are not bound to this body. So, let's keep going.
Help me to keep in mind that even death, since come it must, at least comes only once, and need not be suffered 1,000 times beforehand through fear.
I think that speaks for itself.
When death does come, it will be by nature's mercy.
Now this is really beautiful to me because he actually capitalizes the word nature as divine mother. That when death does come, it will be by nature's mercy. I actually have always looked forward to dying. That may sound like a weird thing, but ever since I was a boy, I always looked forward to death. Because I think there will be so much joy in that death, so much surrender. And it will be a mercy, a blow of mercy to finally relieve us of this form.
When it comes, I will welcome it in my soul, for I will understand that it is time for me to move on, lowering the curtain of this life's drama, but traveling perhaps to something new and equally interesting.
Yogananda has a beautiful chant, O life is sweet and death a dream when thy song flows through me. And apparently, he would sometimes switch those orders at the end, and he would sing, O death is sweet and life a dream when thy song flows through me. And that moves me so deeply. Because I feel like that's what it will be like when we finally die. So we can see that all this life is but a dream, and that death itself is a sweet release into our higher and ultimate reality. And Yogananda said that if you stay true to this path of self-realization, when you die, that himself or one of the other avatars will be there to help usher you into the astral realms or into perfect freedom. What a soul-stirring promise. What tremendous blessing that is. How could we be afraid of death if the promise is that we'll get to meet our guru when we die? We can all look forward to that. I've often wondered what it would be like to meet Master face to face, for him to materialize before me, to be able to touch his feet, to be able to tell him how much I love him. But if that day never comes in this earthly flesh, it will certainly come when we shuffle off this mortal coil. And that is a tremendous promise to look forward to. Oh, death is sweet and life a dream.
Yogananda said, if I remember correctly, that all fear stems from the fear of death, and that everything else is just a subsidiary of that, that we fear that losing something in our life will be like a miniature death. But in fact, in death there is surrender, there is resurrection, there's transmutation. And death is a very mystical topic. In astrology, death, rebirth, and transformation are all ruled by the same house. And so even in the cycles of nature, death, regeneration, and rebirth are a closed cycle. And so for us, death of this little body is nothing to be afraid of because it will only regenerate us into our next evolution of our soul. Let's continue. Let me not be a psychological antique fearing change. How often do we simply fear change in our lives? I myself fall into this all the time. Anytime something new comes, for example, this COVID-19 pandemic has been a great catalyst for me to overcome my psychological antiquity, because we all get into a routine, and I like a routine because I know what I'm going to do in the morning and in the afternoon and at night, and I know I can do everything well, and that gives me a little bit of egoic pride, doesn't it? But then all of a sudden, boom, there's a pandemic. And you know, at first it started and, oh, it's in China, oh, it could be bad. And I remember my dad sent me an email and he said, Keshava, if the coronavirus comes to your neighborhood, you should be really careful. And I dismissed him in my mind, and I said, it's not really going to come here. Surprise, surprise. Knock, knock, who's there? It's coronavirus. So all of a sudden, our lives completely changed. And with that change, we've had to revolutionize the way we present classes, the way we do satsangs. And I realized there was a part of my brain that was resisting that change. And I finally caught myself. And, you know, it's sort of like catching a kid stealing cookies out of the cookie jar. Like, hey, what are you doing? Why are you fearing change? There's no reason to be afraid of change. Why not just embrace it? Because the more we fear something, the more we resist it, the more unnecessarily we waste our energy until we're exhausted before we've even done anything. And so I caught myself a few weeks ago being exhausted by being afraid of change. And I said, let's just put that aside. Let's take every day, moment by moment, embracing every opportunity as a golden opportunity to demonstrate the power of willingness over sloth, the power of creativity over obstacles, and so on and so forth. And it's become a lot more joyful. I'm still working on it, but it's a process. Now, he goes on, teach me not to paralyze my nerves daily with the dread of some future imaginary accident. Such dread may only invite the accident to happen. That's the promise of magnetism right there. Bless me that I not let fear anesthetize my mind and shut off my unlimited power as thy child to overcome all tests and trials. That is something worth sitting with. How many times have we anesthetized our mind by fear into being helpless? And then we cry out, we're so weak, we're so helpless, life is so hard. No, you are a lion of God, and you just have forgotten it. How many times this has been true? I once found myself, by a series of events motivated by my own stupidity, climbing a mountain that I had no right to be climbing with my brother. And the long story short is we were climbing a very exposed, dangerous, probably about a 600-foot face with no ropes. And it was perhaps one of the most terrifying things I've ever done in my life. But I realized as I was climbing the mountain, and I remember my brother was stuck on one particular point, but I could see where he ought to put his foot next to help him make the next move. And so clinging onto the rock, I looked up and I said, Kashi, if you put your foot 6 inches over, and I realized my arm was shaking so violently, I couldn't even point steadily. That's how afraid I was. It was so powerful in my body. But I realized if I let that fear control me, the impulse was to just wedge myself in a crack and cry. But I knew if I did that, I would die. I knew I would literally die. And I knew too that if I allowed myself to succumb to that, my brother too might die because my fear might infect him. And so for his sake, I demanded of my heart to be courageous, to be dynamic, to be unafraid. And even if it was just a mask, I tried my very best. And what was really beautiful was after the fact, so spoiler, we made it to the top, we survived. But what was really beautiful was him and I were talking about it a year later when we actually climbed the same mountain and looked down. We climbed it from a safer route. And we looked down and we thought, oh my God, what did we do? But it was really sweet that he said, what got me up that mountain was thinking about you. That I couldn't let my own fear get in the way because I had to get you up that mountain. And I said, I was thinking the same thing. And so when you feel fear, anesthetizing your mind, try to get out of yourself into thinking of how you can serve God and how you need to serve others, because that will give you the motivation as well as the expansion of your heart to overcome that littleness. Now, because we're at time, I'm going to just close again with his ending paragraph. And let's really feel that this is our divine birthright, his divine promise to us as his disciples. Help me to see that neither mighty fortress nor the wealth of Croesus could protect me from disease, earthquakes, and all kinds of accidents. That thou alone art my protector, and that though I walk where bullets fly or where swarms of bacteria abound, I am ever safe, enhaloed in thy all-sheltering.